everybody. It's time for Truth About Markets with Max and Stacy on Residence 104.4. We're artists, come together. And what do they do then? I don't know. What do they do?
Nowadays, they copyright their product and send DMCA notices and, you know, basically join the dark side.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's true. The artists are being squeezed out like the various animals. You know, extinction is rapidly rolling over the plains. You know, it reminds me of this past week. I heard a couple people. I heard an interview Chris Hedges was giving. He was interviewing a couple of folks or on his show. He talks about how the current system that's built seemingly toward engineering human extinction and how the incentives in the economy and neoliberalism reward larceny and are contributing to climate catastrophe and things like that. And one of the conclusions one draws when listening to such a learned man is that surely this system can't continue like this, that it's so obviously unsustainable and harmful that at some point reason will assert itself. But, you know, think about it. Think about the indigenous population of America, the Native Americans who are out there on the plains and been there for thousands of years, completely, you know, sustainable and culturally vibrant. And they look out and they see these people from Europe coming toward them with their strange clothes and synthetic clothes and synthetic wares and kind of wasteful, extremely wasteful and disregard for nature. And I'm sure they too thought that, well, we could go fight these people, but then again, they're so ineffectual and so looking to be so at this disunity with nature that they're just going to fall under the collapse, under the weight of their own dysfunction, you know, like an unstable two-legged stool or something. And sure enough, that didn't happen. Instead, the Native American population was made extinct, essentially, mm-hmm. except for a few on reservations. And I think that's an interesting point to be made in that this current system, which looks completely unsustainable and life-threatening and extinction-provoking, as absurd as it is, I don't see anything that's going to stop it, really.
That's nice. That's, you know, we're in America now, which is going crazy just like everybody else in the world. It seems the West has definitely lost their way. And this week on the Kaiser Report, we interviewed an American guy, Dan Collins, who lives in Shanghai. And he's lived there pretty much for the last 20 years, travels to the U.S. a lot, though. I think his wife is Chinese and they have a Chinese child. So, you know, he knows the whole culture. But there definitely seems to be some sort of, you know, cleaving of the two. There seems to be something that we're kind of becoming hysterical, I think, in the West and abandoning reason and just giving up. It just feels like we're giving up. And if you look at the actual data, the raw data, and it's, I mean, I know everything is manipulated and it all is fake news and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, the fact is that China is eating our lunch. It's starting to eat our lunch. It's gathering up all the tokens to take all the lunch. And it just seems like a totally irrational sort of space, a highly emotional, overwrought, over-emotional space. Even on, you know, the BBC or British television, which is supposed to have a stiff upper lip, everything is highly emotional and overstrung.
Well, getting back to my American Indians, or
Native Americans.
Native Americans, you know, the First Nation people. So what really, think about the genocide that occurred there. It was, they built the railroad, which was like alien technology from outer space. It's so alien. Then they rolled those steam-powered engines across the United States, and guys like Buffalo Bill and others exterminated all the buffalo. And once you get rid of the buffalo, then the First Nation people had no way to survive. And look at the technology of, look at the biggest companies in the world right now. The five biggest companies, certainly in America and probably the world, are Google, Facebook, Apple, and a couple of others. And so they have the equivalent of these railroads. They have the platform. Well, Amazon included there. So they have the platform, and those platforms are connecting massive commercial enterprises that are, look at what Amazon's doing to the retail business. So 10% of America's workforce works in retail. Amazon is forcing the closure of thousands of retail outlets. People are not going to the mall, they're going to Amazon, they're going online to shop. And those people, there's no place for those people to go. Those people are not going to be retrained or relocated or get jobs. They're going to go out. Basically, they're going to be abandoned, just like this is the history of it all. So this is the mega platforms which emerged from the 1990s and have now in the 21st century consolidated their monopoly positions. And it's true. I mean, it's causing a huge dislocation. But I mean, there are Jeff Bezos is very, very close. You know, he's the CEO of Amazon. He's very, very close now to becoming the richest man in the world. Now, that 20 years ago, he was worth basically nothing. And now he's the number one richest guy in the world. That means a lot of people had to be shoved off the boat, had to be pushed into the water for that to happen. And I think the railway and the American native tribes, you know, is a similar comparison.
Yeah, but of course, we had periods of history like this. Speaking of the railroads, we had the robber barons, and the railroads were integral to their success in accumulating billions. The equivalent in 2017 dollars, billions of dollars, and huge fortunes that they acquired. The Carnegies, the Mellons, the Rockefellers, all these people had massive fortunes. Then America got the, started busting up these trusts. They started busting up these monopolies. And we don't have that sort of thing now. We have Google controls 65% of the search engine, 99% of all the growth, 99% of all the growth in ad revenue. And the final quarters, third and fourth quarter of last year, 99% of all the growth went to two companies alone, Google and Facebook. So here you're having that obviously means that just 1% of all revenue available for online publishing platforms, just 1% goes to the rest that has to be shared between all the other outlets. You have Amazon. I don't even know how much of the online, but they control, the growth in online retail shopping is almost entirely going to Amazon as well. So, they're going to have to break up these trusts and monopolies. But right now, Silicon Valley, one thing that is new compared to previous trust busting eras is lobbying and the funds available and the after, the after political career speaking fees that are available for these politicians. So, where do you see this going, Max?
Well, yeah, I mean, are the trusts going to be broken up under a Trump administration? I don't. He's no Teddy Roosevelt. He's not going to bust the trusts up. No way. So that's not going to happen. And when you mentioned the revolving door, I guess the other thing people were talking about past week was the $400,000 fee Obama is getting for speaking to Wall Street. So a lot of folks are, brought this up. The one side says this is a bit of a betrayal, and the other side said, well, he has every right to cash in on the presidency. And what do you think?
I don't think any of our politicians should be able to cash in like this. From Tony Blair receiving like $2 million a year, or George Osborne receiving $800,000 a year from BlackRock. I think this is the way they screw. They can point to other countries and say, oh, look in China or Russia or Venezuela or Argentina or Brazil or Mexico or any of these other places around the world, Singapore, Hong Kong. They give the money to the politicians in office, and that's corruption. And then they say, we don't do that. It's in the after we leave office, it's the free market. This is what they're giving us, the $400,000 for a half hour speech, or paying George Osborne £867,000 a year to consult twice a week for BlackRock, or paying Tony Blair £2 million by JP Morgan for whatever he does there. I think that's how we do corruption. And in the perception is that it's corruption. And I think the perception is just as important. And I think that undermines faith in our institutions more than any sort of allegations of any hacking or, just reporting one's opinion. I think the fact that our elite are doing this sort of committing this sort of behavior, they're not like Jimmy Carter. They're not, Jimmy Carter lives in a humble house and his family does, and they don't cash in on his having been a president. Charles de Gaulle died almost penniless. I think because it used to be considered undignified to do this, so, to behave like this.
Well, during the financial crisis of 2008, we raised the question, why not prosecute the bankers like Iceland did? Because they violated the law multiple times, and they've created massive fraud, committed massive fraud. And the answer we got at the time was, well, we can't because as Obama's attorney general said, they're too big to prosecute. They're beyond the law. They're beyond prosecution. Obama would say we can't risk on destabilizing the economy, and all these other excuses that we've said. Like that's all very false. It's just corruption. And he'll do what Tony Blair did. He'll leave office and start cashing checks. He'll do what all these corrupt guys do. And sure enough, that's true. Why didn't he go after the bankers? Because they told him privately to lay off and he would get a big check when he leaves office. That's corruption.
Well, they didn't even know. They didn't need to tell. That's the problem. That's the huge, huge problem here is they don't need to do that. That is like third world sort of stuff that you have to say it publicly. They know, even Obama at his last White House press correspondents dinner, he joked that that's what he was going to do is start coining it. He's something like cashing in or coining it, he said, on giving speeches. So he knew what was coming. He knew this was open to him, and this is the benefit that the taxpayers of America basically give him from his position that they elected him to. So he didn't need to be told. He was telling us this is what he's going to do because this is what presidents get to do nowadays.
Well, yeah. Well, it's called a wink and a nod. If I'm the Cantor Fitzgerald banker who cut the $400,000 check, I don't need to explicitly say, "Hey, Obama, don't prosecute because and here's the amount of money we're going to send you." I just need to be in the same room as him and just hint that you got to start thinking longer term, buddy, and then leave it at that. Leave it on the table. That's a message. I mean, it's like trading an insider information, which happens every single day amongst bankers who are, it's illegal. It happens all the time. And it's done using euphemisms and code words. And Barrack is, if anything, not a stupid man. So if somebody stares you in the eye and taps their wallet and says, "Hey, buddy, see you in a few years," he's not, he's not going to miss the what the point of that gesture is.
Any well, you know, the fact is everybody knows from we know from you know Bill Clinton, we know from Tony Blair, we know that former Democrats especially get paid very
Well, the
well.
proof is in accepting the money. I mean, that's the proof. I mean, if there wasn't proof, then he wouldn't accept the money. You know, he cashed the check, he's guilty. Throw him in jail.
So he's also speaking at another, he's also making $400,000 for another speech. I'm trying to find who it is to. It might be to A&E at the A&E Networks advertising. So it might be, yeah. So it's going to be in front of A&E, the cable network in America, in front of their advertisers. He's going to speak for 90 minutes for $400,000. So anyway, you know, and he, what did he allow? He allowed the, you know, concentration of media power under his reign. So, you know, the fact is, you know, I doubt, personally, I doubt very much there was even a wink or nod. It didn't need to happen because we know for a fact what does happen. Previous experience from Tony Blair to Bill Clinton, it tells you that if you don't prosecute bankers, if you allow the concentration of power in media, that there is a fat paycheck for you coming after you leave the White
Well,
House.
so the question is, was his incentive to become a politician to make money or do public service?
Yeah, that's the question. But that's a dangerous thing once it's the, once people once the population once the voters start to think that it's just a tawdry, corrupt place. And I think this actually is part a large part of the reason why Hillary Clinton lost, despite what the media were predicting. She lost because people saw her as part of this tawdry, corrupt class that were just in it for these huge speaking fees. The fact that she did speak to like Goldman Sachs twice for $300,000 each for the speeches, maybe even three times. That was part of it. This it was tawdry. So the fact that you know Obama waited until after he left office and he's giving these speeches, but it'll reflect badly on the other Democrats in that same vein coming forward.
Yeah, and I guess with Trump, the theory was, well, he's already tawdry.
Yes.
He's already billionaire. Like, he wouldn't succumb to the siren song of this type of corruption. But what we're discovering is that he's completely incompetent. So when he says after 100 days that I didn't think the job was as hard as it is, that's amazing because it shows that he, you know, he got the impression that when he was running that he didn't really put a lot of prep into what he was doing. He got the talking points. He's great as a good salesman. He knows how to sell. So coming up with drain the swamp, you know, it's like, you know, a great ad slogan, a great campaign. You know, he's the Barry Manilow of presidential candidates. You know, he can write a good jingle. And he I don't think he apparently never gave it any thought, like on the weekends or on that night. He literally just said, whatever, President, how tough could it be? You know, in that like New York chutzpah kind of like, how tough could it be, you know, President of the United States? I'll just, you know, change everything. Okay, now he's saying after 100 days, oh, you know, this is actually kind of tough. There's a lot of countries out there, and when I bomb people, they die, and it doesn't make me feel good, and I can't talk to anybody. And he's coming across like some crazed teenage YouTube teenager who's trapped in their bedroom, who suddenly just found out that their goldfish died and is having an emotional breakdown. This is how Trump is coming across.
Yeah, he's quite had quite a bizarre week. So his 100 days was hit. And in America, that's a big thing. Like your first 100 days define your presidency. And basically he hasn't accomplished anything, but he was desperate to accomplish something by the 100th day. And so we had a lot of like action, a lot of stuff happening, and it would be like, we're gonna bomb North Korea. They were getting ready for bombing North Korea, and we put this THAAD missile in South Korea, and this upset the Chinese. And then, like overnight, he decided, no, we're going to talk to North Korea. This was in the middle of the night, And by the way, we're going to charge South Korea $1 billion for this THAAD missile. And the next day, the South Koreans were obviously surrounded by journalists, asked, "Are you going to pay $1 billion for this THAAD missile system?" And they're like, "No, we haven't heard of this." Then he was like, "We're about to talk. I'm about to talk with Justin Trudeau and Enrique Peña Nieto from Mexico and Canada, and we're gonna get out of NAFTA." And that was all the headlines. And then he was like, "Actually, we like NAFTA. We're gonna do that." And then he gave a statement to Wall Street Journal or Reuters, and it was like, "Well, I'm both a nationalist and a globalist, so exact opposites. So, you know, I'm both short and tall." Like, he was saying things that can't be possibly be true at the same time.
Yeah, just like a whining New Yorker guy, like at the delicatessen ordering a brisket sandwich, and like, "I ordered a brisket. You call this a brisket? Look at all this gristle. I want real brisket." You know, I'm just like holding up the line, throwing a tantrum. You know, he was born with a silver spoon in his mouth, never worked a day in his life. So now he's applying this life experience of being a crybaby to geopolitics around the world. And, oh man, you know who's also getting their teeth kicked in? I don't see how anyone else could describe it, is Theresa May. You know, Europe is basically just.
That's a very American phrase for British people, but yes, she's well, they're in the middle of this election, and this whole Brexit thing is insane. We could talk about the Brexit thing because she's saying that the 27 EU nations are ganging up on Britain and trying to force a hard deal.
Well, the biggest news is that the EU, in my opinion, I think this is pretty big news. The EU is now opening the door for Irish reunification, saying that if Ireland reunifies, then they're welcome into the EU. Now, why would Northern Ireland do this? Well, Northern Ireland has been treated badly during this whole, occupation that's been going on. And part of the Brexit would be, yeah, they need to put a hard border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. So that's going to be really, cumbersome and nasty, and just bring back all that sectarian violence that people, want to move on from. And economically, if Northern Ireland joins the Republic of Ireland and then joins the EU, they're going to get a lot of money. I mean, the Republic of Ireland economy under the EU became this
The Celtic
Celtic
Tiger.
tiger. Then they had a crash, and now they're back bigger than they ever were. Northern Ireland, meanwhile, has been, about as economically exciting as Wales. You know, it's like, Belfast is about equivalent to, Cardiff. There's a bit of a boring area in terms of the economy. And so, why wouldn't they do this? And that means that Northern Ireland leaves, Scotland has a referendum, they're leaving. So all that's left is going to be England and frickin' Wales.
Well, it'll be interesting times for sure. By the way, you know, when I was always surprised when you were at Belfast Airport, and it's like, you know, all the trinkets for sale are like they're like leprechauns and making it look like it's part of Ireland anyway. So, you know what? Join the EU, folks, Northern Ireland. So, what else? Oh, Trump announced a one-page document. I like the way he does this. Like, everything is just half. I can't say the word. The half aid. Hashtag D. So he has a one-page document for tax reform, and his proposal is to slash corporate tax rates to 15% from 35%. Obviously, you know, I think Ireland has 15%. The UK has 19%. So what you've seen over the past 5, 10 years is a lot of American companies do what's called a tax inversion. So they basically merge a huge, like Pfizer tried to do this, huge, obviously American pharmaceutical company. My mom used to work there. Huge pharmaceutical company tried to become like this Irish company so they could be taxed 15%. So obviously you have to close that gap because all these American companies are just going to go to the UK or Ireland, to English-speaking countries, and collect a much lower tax. So there's a huge tax reform. Tax reform is hard to do in America because of the way our system is. And there's so much pork and so much special interests and lobbyists. And a lot of the huge corporations actually like the very complicated tax code because they wrote it to be complicated so that no competition could ever emerge and compete with them, because they're the ones that know how to escape all the taxes. But what do you think about this?
Yeah, you're right. Ireland and the UK have lower tax rates. This would discourage the tax inversions if you get rid of the tax arbitrage. Mm-hmm. And but again, the other point is also true. Like he'll say this one day and reverse himself the next day, and what we hear is that he changes his mind based on who's in the room at that time. He just goes with what he hears at that time. So he has no principles, no vision, no goals that he's setting out to do. And he's just learning on the job, feeling his way through the job. But yeah, I mean, that would be true if that were to happen to the tax rate. There would be the 7 tax brackets for Americans would be reduced to 3. Mm-hmm. So you're simplifying the tax rate. There should be a flat tax of 20%, let's say. People say, well, that's regressive for the poor because it's a regressive tax that would hit the poor hardest, hit the poor harder. But I think those arguments don't stand up, not really.
I think they should just do a flat tax, no loopholes at all. Because remember, the American legislation is something like 30, 40, 50,000 pages. It's crazy. But they should do a flat tax, but not start it. Like the first 25, 30,000 is untaxed. So anything above that is taxed at a flat rate. So, you know, most of the retail sector, as you said, 10% of America's working retail sector won't pay any taxes.
Yeah, there should be the way to reduce tax is to reduce the size of government. So the question is, how do you reduce the size of government? And the biggest line item on the budget is the military, mm-hmm. which is roughly 50% of the entire budget, is the biggest military of all the other militaries of all the other countries in the world combined. And so if you're going to cut taxes and at the same time talk about bombing North Korea, being belligerent with Syria, posturing with Russia, Somalia. Bombing Yemen, Somalia. So you're increasing your warfare, as they're called, you know, welfare for war hawks is called warfare. Then I'm pretty sure you have no room to cut taxes, unless you, as he has suggested, cut taxes from things like the arts, which is the worst thing you can possibly do.
Yeah, it's less than $1 billion. That's not even one mother of all bombs. So
it's nothing. So it's like less than a weekend of tomahawks.
Anyway, that's it for this episode of The Truth About Markets on Resonance 104.4 FM in London.
Bye, y'all.